MS in electrical engineering and a PhD, so it's Dr. Radin, in psychology, both from the University of Illinois. For 10 years, he conducted research on advanced telecommunication systems at AT&T Bell Labs and GTE Laboratories. Then, for the majority of the last 20 years, he has investigated psychic phenomena in academic and industrial positions. Dean served as a member of a classified research project investigating psychic phenomena for the U.S. government at SRI International, headed PSI research programs in Silicon Valley for two scientific and industrial think tanks, has been senior scientist at the Institute of Noetic Sciences since 2001, and is also adjunct faculty at Sonoma State University in California. Dean's research has been featured in numerous magazines, and he's appeared on several radio and television programs. In addition, he is author of the book, The Conscious Universe. Now, for those of you who would like something really creepy to do tonight as you listen to the program, I'll probably get in trouble for this, but go to Google and put in Princeton eggs, like Princeton University, that's what it is, and then eggs, Princeton eggs. And if you can get to the actual website of the eggs themselves, and you don't think it's creepy, we're going to explain to you in a few moments exactly what it is you're seeing and hearing when you view the Princeton eggs on your computer. But it is a totally creepy, creepy experience. It creeps me out every time I do it, but I love it. So go ahead, go to Google and put in Princeton eggs, and then it'll kind of set the mood because you're going to hear it all explained here in a very few moments with Dean Radin. In all the years that I've been doing talk radio and this kind of talk radio, I've never found anything that I've been more interested, fascinated with, and in fact sure of, than I have this whole consciousness thing. Dean Radin, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Art. It's good to hear you.
And you as well. Now, I just finished sending a whole bunch of people up to the eggs. They're kind of fun, kind of interesting. I mean, it's, I don't know, perhaps somewhat meaningless to just sit and watch them, but there's some sort of intriguing creepiness to it all. And they're going to be sitting there watching those and listening to that heartbeat-like sound with the dings and gongs every now and then. And they're going to be wondering what it is they're seeing, because they're new to all this and have no idea what we're talking about.
Actually, I'm interested in why you're referring to them as creepy.
I don't know. There's a Because to me, they are kind of creepy. not in a horror movie creepy kind of sense. Just, I don't know, sitting there looking at, perhaps, understanding what I'm looking at and hearing is a little bit creepy. I mean, you know, that may be consciousness we're observing at work in its random and sometimes not so random way. So Yeah, creepy in that sense, that's all. The magnitude of it, I think, Dean.
Right. So I assume you're talking about the little dot that will change color and the sounds go along with it.
That's right.
What that's showing is a close to real-time representation of the degree of order in a worldwide network of random number generators.
In other words, each one of those little... Well, when I see it, I see bars. I guess it depends on how you have it set, but I see some bars that go up and down and the sounds and everything. And each one of those separate bars represents a computer someplace or another in the world, right?
That's right. Yeah,
and these computers are generating as close to a random number as can be generated. Is that correct?
Each device is fundamentally random. At least as far as we know through quantum mechanics, there is no known way of predicting what each successive random bit will be.
Right.
So it's theoretically and fundamentally random.
Okay.
And the exciting thing is, and perhaps the creepy thing is, that at times they no longer act random.
Yes, that's right.
And so what we're interested in this project is looking at the correlations between our inference of worldwide events that attract a lot of interest,
mm-hmm.
and the relationship between those events and the appearance of order in these random generators.
Maybe I said creepy because a couple of times when I've been there, Dean, all of a sudden, it did kind of go berserk. I mean, I've had people, you know, email me and say, hey, Art, tonight the eggs are really going nuts. And so I'll get interested and I'll go take a look. And sure enough, it's gong, 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 gongs from everywhere. And it's just jumping around like crazy. And that's where the creepy comes from, because I have the feeling that I might be looking at the precursor to some kind of big event.
Well, it's possible. I mean,
yeah.
In a sense, you're looking at a form of the pulse of the planet. It's a form of pulsing that is much closer to mind than it might be to a heart. But, of course, you also have to keep in mind that when you're looking at random events, that it's very easy to start seeing patterns where there actually are no patterns.
Ah, the problem encountered really with the entire project, right?
That's right. That's right. And so we are very careful in our analyses to make predictions in advance and make analyses in advance. In other words, we use planned analyses so we don't fool ourselves into seeing patterns that actually aren't there.
Right. And now this has been going on. This project has been active for how long now, Dean?
It's in August it'll be 8 years.
8 years, yeah. of recording this, huh? Was
right.
It always roughly the size it is now, or has it grown during that 8 years?
No, it started with 3 random generators, and now it's stabilizing at about 70.
At about 70. So, again, so people understand, these individual computers, about 70 of them, scattered around the entire globe, mm-hmm. are spinning out as close to random as one can imagine, practically, I guess, really random numbers, and there is this tendency for the computers to simultaneously, or very nearly simultaneously, take off and become non-random, and that's when the alarms and the gongs and the bells go off. When this, depending on how much non-randomness there is. Now, over these 8 years, it has been studied very carefully. We've looked at very large world events like 9/11, like I'm sure the tsunami, the earthquake, things that have just affected the mind of just about everybody on the globe. What would you summarize as a result so far, Dean?
Well, there have been a total of 199 events,
mm-hmm.
of the types that you've mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Of those, 186 are considered formal events, formal in the sense that they're very precisely specified. And some of the others were more vague, so they're dropped from the formal analysis.
Okay.
So of the 186 formal events, the overall odds against chance as of now, basically, is 50,000 to 1 in favor of order appearing when there shouldn't be any.
Oh, my God. So now you've got some numbers for us. The possibility of these 186 being reflected as however they have been, mm-hmm. in the project would be about 1 in 50,000.
That's right.
Odds are really starting to tip in our favor here, aren't they?
Well, the odds have fluctuated over time. At one time, they were over 1,000,000 to 1, and then they bounced down, and now they're bouncing back up again. So it's we're beginning to learn, now that we have so many different events, that some of the events produce a measurable effect and others don't.
Hmm. Is there any pattern to the kind of event that produces a larger reaction?
We think so. For example, one type of event that we might think would produce a reaction, in fact, does not, and that is natural disasters. So people have asked, well, what about the tsunami?
Hmm.
The tsunami did not produce a significant result using our standard analysis.
Nor the earthquake that precipitated it?
No, nor, okay. nor the earthquake. But we've now, this is partially a result of the way that we analyze the data. You know, as I said, that in order to be clear that we're not trying to look for patterns, we use a standard form of analysis that may not be appropriate for each one of these events. And so we've gone back now and looked at 55 events that we call impulse events.
Right.
These are things like earthquakes, terrorist attacks, and so on. They're not planned. They start at a very specific time, and then they persist for some time afterwards.
Yes.
When you look at those events, and by the way, most of those are natural disasters, besides the terrorist attacks, they're mostly natural disasters, which don't tend to give a very interesting result. You can do what's called a cross-correlation analysis, where you look at the moment that the event occurs, like the beginning of an earthquake, and then you slide in time the data, so you slide forward in time, you slide backwards in time, to see if the event has something like a precursor. You know, maybe there's nothing happening at time zero, but if you start going back 10 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour before the event, maybe there's something happening before.
Right.
Similar to what we saw in 9/11.
Right.
And as it turns out, there is. For these impulse events, the 55 impulse events, there is a precursor, and it kind of looks like a wave, the way the graph is drawn, that's between 2 and 4 hours in advance of the event itself.
That's fascinating.
So it's as a result of many years of analysis and looking at this in new ways that we're beginning to learn what happens in the network based on the kind of event that's coming up.
Now, so that I'm clear, with regard to the tsunami, was there that precursor?
That was an earthquake event and
yes.
part of the impulse, part of the 55 impulse events we looked at. So I don't know specifically for that specific event.
I guess I was going to ask whether it was just sort of human oriented events. I don't know, like the United States going to war, for example, something that we were all aware of, but still when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Whether in Earth movement type events, geophysical events where humans are not involved, there simply is not the kind of output that you can read.
Well, we have another analysis where the 55 events, by the way, were ones that were registered. We have a registry of these events. But, of course, the earthquake's happening all the time, and we didn't register all of them. So one type of analysis simply looked throughout the entire database where every time there was an earthquake of at least magnitude 7.
Right.
Some of them we got and some of them we had missed. And for those events as well, these kinds of other impulse events we had missed, they also show these effects.
Huh.
So, which makes it even more interesting because what we're trying to do is see whether or not it's that maybe we as the analysts are just picking favorable times. You know, we're dealing with a large random walk here.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could somehow psychically or intuitively guess the right kind of event to choose, then maybe we're the result. You know, it's not like we're not creating patterns that aren't there, but we're impressing the pattern somehow through ourselves, and it has nothing to do with the global consciousness. But that kind of argument begins to go away if it turns out that we go to events that we had not considered previously, and they show an effect as well, and that does seem to be happening.
Can you name the kind of event that really has sent it off the charts?
Well, unfortunately, terrorism seems to do a pretty good job.
It does.
One of the largest effects ever was the first event, which were the embassy bombings back in 1998. That turned out to be Al-Qaeda, although we didn't know it yet.
Huh.
Bombs in Yugoslavia, big train crash in India. And then occasionally, these large-scale meditations will also produce a big effect.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, these big planned meditations. One of the more recent effects was in Pope John's funeral.
Oh, yes.
That was predicted, and in fact, that got a significant result. And then an almost significant result for Prince Charles's wedding.
Really?
I don't know what to make of that.
Nor
so
do I.
Previously, in Princess Di's funeral was a very large effect also.
Uh-huh.
So it's something like things that attract very large scale of attention by lots of people. Whereas, and unfortunately, negative events tend to do that more often than positive events. Whereas natural disasters will attract a lot of attention, but they tend to be diffuse. You know, they're spread out over long periods of time. And most people have an attitude of, while they're paying attention to it, it's tragic and yet unavoidable. So there's a different emotional valence that's associated with natural disasters that is not there when we're dealing with human events.
Hey, Dean, do you think that if we had, instead of one computer at each location, we had two computers at each location, with one of the computers in each case being inside a Faraday cage, do you think the output would be any different at all?
No. And the reason I say that is because the random number generators are actually built inside metal boxes. So, huh. so the guts of the generator, which is based on quantum noise,
are shielded.
Is already shielded. And the box is connected to the computer, and the computer is grounded. So
boy, oh boy, oh boy.
It's in a pretty good cage already. And actually, another interesting question that we looked at is, what would happen, given that we get data from each device every second, what would happen if we looked at the entire analysis for the even seconds and then looked for the odd seconds?
Huh.
Would we get a similar result?
And?
The answer is yes, you do.
Huh.
What that means is that whatever's going on is acting as though it's an external effect, which is consistent with the idea that there's something out there which is impressing itself into the generator.
God, isn't that fascinating? Mm-hmm. Isn't that fascinating? Anybody have any guesses about how that could be happening? I suppose it jumps right up into the quantum world, huh?
It's something to do with quantum mechanics, probably, and it is acting as though it was a field. I mean, we talk about field consciousness, and we use that initially as kind of a metaphor, but it seems to behave in that way. It's as though the medium itself, physical medium that we live in, is not purely like classical physics has said, but it involves something else. Whether the something else is mind or consciousness, we don't quite know. But the medium itself seems to be modulated in some way. Because otherwise, all of the usual ways of thinking about electromagnetic interference and so on, they just don't work by design.
Huh.
The random generator is hidden from all that.
Well, maybe whoever wrote the line in Star Wars about, "May the Force be with you." Well, crap. Looks like we crashed the egg server. Hey, Dean. You know, it was a while ago that you and I first talked, and since that time, I've had a range of guests on, Dean, a giant range of guests, and it's sort of like the whole thing has exploded.
Which thing are you referring to?
Well, I don't know. The whole consciousness thing has exploded. The awareness of this power, if it is a power, this field, you said field, I guess that's a good word for it, the existence of this field has been discussed by guests in all kinds of different, with all kinds of different interests, let me put it that way. So my goodness, awareness is way up in this field, isn't it?
Yeah, I would agree. I think we first spoke maybe 8 or 9 years ago.
Exactly.
And since then, the academic interest and popular interest in consciousness and quantum mechanics and how they might interact really has exploded.
Right through the roof.
Yeah. I spent all day yesterday being interviewed for the next version of the movie, What the Bleep. What the Bleep Do We Know?
No kidding.
Yeah. So that's an example of a combination of theatrical film and documentary that basically came out of the blue and has been a wild success. I mean, and who would have thought that a movie that's trying to portray the meaning of quantum mechanics would be a big success?
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Now that there are these additional years under the belt of the project itself, is it beginning to gather enough evidence so that that more academics are going, I guess we better take a look at this?
I wouldn't say that the Global Consciousness Project alone has done that.
Right.
There's a confluence of additional evidence from other kinds of psi experiments, but the combined evidence is becoming strong enough now that it's difficult for people not to pay attention to it anymore. I mean, if someone really doesn't want to pay attention, they can ignore it very, very nicely. But for the many of the rest of us who are open-minded about it and recognize that if it's true, it's quite important, the strength of the overall evidence is pretty solid.
I wonder, Dean, as awareness of consciousness as a field or a force becomes generalized, if that would affect significantly, for example, the results being gathered at Princeton. I would imagine it certainly could, couldn't it?
Yeah, it would affect that, and it could also affect any kind of experiment that involves consciousness in
yes.
some way.
Yes.
I mean, we know just from laboratory experiments that motivation is an extremely important element in these experiments. So if there's something like a building public excitement and interest, that will invariably affect these experiments.
Do you think, Dean, and I know this is asking you to walk way out on a plank that you probably won't want to walk out on, but do you think that massive amounts of public consciousness directed could have an effect on a thing or a system like weather or complex systems, a small effect with a big ending, perhaps the butterfly effect kind of thing, I don't know, or maybe even something stronger than that. Could it affect things?
Well, we know that the answer is yes, or at least that's what the data is suggesting. I mean, the Global Consciousness Project is looking specifically at that very issue. It's a little bit different in that what you're asking is whether focused intention
yes.
by lots of people could
yes.
do it. My guess is yes. We know that simple attention, and not even focused attention, but just attention on something, anything, will make a small effect in these generators. The problem with, I mean, you can imagine something like a television show or a radio show where millions of people are asked to simultaneously think certain thoughts
mm-hmm.
or to direct their thoughts.
Yes.
The problem is that these phenomena seem to be involved in some way with the notion of coherence. It's not simply that there's a lot of stuff being thrown, but it's stuff of a certain kind.
Mm-hmm.
And by analogy, in the mysteries in quantum mechanics are due to something called quantum coherence. And if you don't have quantum coherence, then all of the mystery goes away, basically. It looks like a classical system. That seems to be true for these kinds of effects as well.
All right. In quantum mechanics, it's my understanding that two cells that have come from the same place on opposite ends of the Earth will be noted to react the same way at the same time. I've had really good scientists on here trying to explain to me how this might be. I can't wrap my brain around the fact that there's not a kind of a communication taking place in the way we understand it, going at light speed.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it doesn't go at any speed. It's beyond speed. It's beyond time, it seems. So this field, how is it allowing two objects to react the same way at the same time? In some way, certainly, we can't grasp.
Well, the reason why it's difficult to grasp is because common sense tells us and classical physics formalizes a model of the world which involves, which essentially is like a large clockwork mechanism. Mm-hmm. It's a world in which space is absolute and time is absolute,
mm-hmm.
and things work by balls and sticks touching each other.
And communication doesn't go faster than the speed of light.
That's right.
Right. So
and so all of the our usual ways of thinking, if somebody says, how do you explain this phenomena of, say, entanglement? How do you explain it? What they have in mind is an explanation which has to do with clockwork gears and that sort of thing. But we're really talking fundamentally here about the fabric of reality. What is the fabric of physical reality? Quantum mechanics says it is something completely unlike what common sense tells us. And that's why it's so difficult to wrap your mind around it.
Right.
I can tell, the interpretation that I resonate with was the one that David Bohm gave, which is that we live in a holistic medium. The physical fabric of reality is a holistic medium, which means that everything coexists with everything else. He called it the implicate order. Our common sense shows us the explicate order, the world of appearances. But underneath it is the implicate order in which everything is wrapped around everything else. It all coexists. So when you see an example of either two particles which are entangled, as in the physics lab, or, I think, telepathy, two people who are entangled and at a distance, the reason why it appears as though there's a signal between the two, that is an appearance, it's not actually what's happening. What actually is happening is that we're seeing two things which at some deep level are actually the same thing.
That's hard. That's really hard.
I've developed this idea to say, let's just assume that the quantum mechanics is telling us that we really do live in a holistic environment. One way of thinking of it is we all live in this giant bowl of clear jello, and you're kind of locked in place in this jello, but any movement, any action, any thought will ripple out and affect the entire rest of the pool of jello that we all are living in. So this is not quite right, because in jello things are in separate locations, but it's a metaphor. So in this medium that we live in, everything is affecting everything else. Everything reverberates out and is touching and feeling everything else. That means that the physical brain is entangled with everything else. Every movement, every electrical activity, every thought is radiating out.
And it certainly would explain a lot of the otherwise inexplicable, wouldn't it?
Well, if you then go through, you say, okay, let's assume that's true. What would that be like if that were true? What would it feel like experientially,
mm-hmm.
if in fact at some deep level everything is connected? And I went through the list of known psychic effects that people report, and they all make sense. They make sense from a point of view that there are no signals passing, and it's not like there are lightning bolts coming out of your head that somehow go to the right place. All of the phenomena like remote viewing and telepathy and precognition and so on, they make sense from a point of view of a different kind of physical medium that we live in, as opposed to some kind of exotic force.
Do you think that conventional physics is going to ever be able to deal with it?
I think we're getting close. I think, the ontological implications of quantum mechanics are nowhere near worked out. And I also don't think that quantum mechanics is the end of the road in physics. It's just the latest road in physics. But if you follow the history of physics from classical to quantum, and then where it's pointing beyond that, I think that the answer is definitely yes. We will eventually understand psychic and mystical experience from a scientific point of view, and it's going to be related very closely to what physics says about the nature of the medium in which we live.
Well, I'll tell you, that'll be the day when traditional physicists are explaining to us how people are able to read other people's minds, or can draw a bridge that somebody's looking at half a world away and the environment they're in.
I think it's going to be sooner than we might think.
That'll be the day, won't it? It's going to be hard for them, or maybe it won't.
No,
maybe.
No, I actually don't think it's going to be hard at all.
You don't think so?
No, because when the time comes that all of the ideas fall together, it'll suddenly make sense. And then people will, you know, they'll hit themselves in the head saying, well, why in the world did it take so long to figure this out? And I think one of the keys that we'll probably see within the next decade will be a demonstration of bioentanglement.
Bioentanglement. What would that be like?
Well, what we see in the physics labs now are entanglement of elementary particles.
Right.
It might be called physical entanglement.
Right.
Bioentanglement is when we start seeing that in living systems. We'll first see it in things like biomolecules, and then we'll see it in enzymes, and eventually bacteria, and so on. There's no theoretical reason why such entanglement cannot exist. We haven't seen it yet, but that's more due to limitations and apparatus that we have rather than a theoretical reason.
Doesn't mean it's not going on now.
Well, I think it is going on. See, this new book that I've written called Entangled Minds, the whole theme in the book is saying that if we follow this sequence of logic from classical to quantum physics and then entanglement and bioentanglement and so on, if we keep going in that, eventually going to end up with entanglement at the human level, in minds, entangled minds. What would that be like? Well, there are experiments that we've already done, we've been doing for decades, that suggest that two people can exchange information, both consciously and unconsciously, at a distance and well-shielded and all the rest, and we never find any forces. We don't find any signals. We don't find any reduction of the ability at a distance. All of that doesn't make sense from a classical physics perspective. It makes a lot of sense from a quantum perspective.
When we hear about two or three or four inventors virtually working on or inventing roughly the same thing and getting into patent fights and all the rest of it, as so frequently happens, are we seeing, do you think, some sort of entanglement that's occurring in human minds at the same exact instant?
It may well be. I mean, that phenomenon may be similar to spontaneous telepathy that occurs between people.
Huh.
Especially given in that case, and with inventors, they're all kind of thinking along the same lines anyway.
You know, right.
There's always multiple people working on the same problem.
Right.
But if the same novel idea arises in a bunch of people at the same time,
it seems to.
It looks like there's some large-scale correlation that has been created. And that is essentially what an entangled system would look like.
Well, it causes plenty of entanglements, that's for sure, because people automatically say to themselves, Bull, this was my idea. I know exactly when it occurred to me. I know when the light bulb went off. This was mine.
In a truly entangled, holistic system, there is no isolation. Nothing belongs to anyone. It all belongs to everything. I mean, it would take a really significant change of worldview to get your mind wrapped around that.
Well, maybe one day we'll see a lawyer defending somebody with a defense of quantum entanglement.
I can envision that.
Yes.
I can see that.
So can I. He had the idea because he had the idea because the idea was there. And
the idea permeates us all, and some people were more sensitive to it than others. By the way, we're going to talk about these and many similar things at the IONS conference, which is coming up July 6th through 11th.
The IONS conference.
The Institute of Noetic Science. Every 2 years, we have a conference. We try to bring together all of the leading-edge thinkers having to do with consciousness and healing, spirituality, psi research, quantum physics, and so on. And so if you're interested in hearing a cell biologist and an astrophysicist debate a mystic and a monk, then this is the conference for you.
It ought to be one hell of a year.
Yep.
I'll say that. I mean, this is hot stuff right now. It really is hot stuff.
Well, so it's coming up in July 6th through 11th in Arlington, Virginia. You can look it on our website and see all about it.
I'm imagining it will be very well attended.
Well, we hope so.
No, I think so.
We face an interesting embarrassment here, in a sense, like an embarrassment of riches.
Yes.
When the Institute of Noetic Sciences started out some 30 years ago, discussing consciousness in a serious way was considered the farthest fringe. It was like nuts to talk about consciousness.
Absolutely.
And it really has exploded now. It's become almost, in fact, it has become mainstream, even within the scientific community. So it's becoming more difficult to get a large convention of people simply because there are many conventions that are doing this now. We like to think our conventions are better, but, you know, I'm biased.
So this is the way, through conventions like this, that we will begin to grasp an understanding of how big this is, what it all means. I mean, there are so many, questions about it.
Well, you know, the conventions are designed for public discussion.
Right.
And mostly your scientists and scholars who are giving the presentations, but it's for a public audience. There are other conferences which are designed for scientific audiences. And I think that's really where the leading edge action is taking place. And there's some very interesting things to report about that.
Oh?
For example, 10 years ago, I may have mentioned the Invisible College.
I think you did, yes.
This refers to scientists and academics who are very, very interested in these topics, including psi, but who have been very reluctant to talk about it. Because there's this taboo that you're not supposed to talk about certain things.
Of course.
The size of that invisible college has been really increasing in the same way that public interest has been increasing. But it is also beginning to morph in an interesting way. Some of the people in academia now, some of whom are very distinguished folks holding endowed chairs at major universities,
yes,
have been conducting their own psi research successfully.
And quietly, I take.
And not talking about it.
Uh-huh.
And since I'm a bit of a lightning rod for these things, I get contacted by lots of people all over the place.